episode, I'm already tired.
Okay. Hello and welcome to Kingdom Quest episode 428. I'm your host, the worst Hollow Knight Silksong player in the world, Mike Apps, aka Wheels, with me as always.
The least Hollow Knight Silksong player in the world, David Bernie, Family Master.
They probably should get around to this game sometime, but you know what? Just, there's too many other things. Gamer in the world.
If you get around to playing this game, don't play Silksong unless you enjoy pain.
Yeah, I mean,
for the record,
I definitely start with Hollow Knight if I did. But yeah, so yeah,
it's your man. 428 is the conditions required.
What's that?
HTTP 428 is preconditions required.
And this is the full-on Hollow Knight hater, Smoke and Joe Gamer.
You haven't even played Hollow Knight.
Oh, that even...
Yes,
that
I have.
Almost
how far did you get in?
I think I played 3 or 4 hours of it.
That's insufficient. It's like a 30 to 40 hours.
No.
I will make the argument that no Metroidvania should be 34 hours long.
Yeah.
I don't disagree.
So in contrast, Metroid Prime 4 just took me 16 hours to get 100% completion. So,
I mean, I can't begin to imagine like the amount of development work that it would take to make an insanely long like 3D Metroidvania like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that. It would be too long. Yeah.
Yeah, Silksong does feel like, hey, this is two people's passion project, and they probably should have hired some more people and taken listen to some notes. For the love of God.
Yeah.
Don't make me track down and pay for the map for the damn area. Just fucking give it to me.
I couldn't stand that.
Despite my now love of Hollow Knight, it remains my biggest complaint of that game. Because I don't think it does anything for it whatsoever.
No.
Like, I'm not even talking necessarily like, give me the map, just let the map populate.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh. I'm fighting a shell walker. That's great. Yeah, I'm playing Lego.
What we've been playing.
I'm playing Lego Horizon Adventures right now as we speak.
I want a version of Horizon that replaces all the dinosaur robots with Eggman Badnik from Sonic 1-3.
Never play that.
That'd be fun.
I'm Shellcracker. That. Yeah. Do we try to put like a cap of 3 minutes on each of these? Do we want to get started?
Yeah, let's talk about one game each. The main game I would talk about, I can't even talk about anyway. So.
Lol. Quick E33 report. I'm officially, if you were listening to Shenan's last night, you'll know that I mentioned I'm officially in Act 2. I will avoid speaking too much because I assume Wheels wants to finish it eventually.
Yeah.
On
easy mode.
And
yeah.
And Act 1 ends with just a pile of big old spoilers. It's fine. It remains a 7. I have misgivings about the long-term story viability of the choices made with this big Act 2 twist. But...
Interesting.
I will leave it at that. I've got the fifth character. I'm moving on up in the world, but I guess like my biggest issue at this point is that there still, like, isn't really a party dynamic. Like, they're starting to develop one, but, like, this is at the, you know, six or seven dungeons in, and, like, I've been trying to find every conversation. Like, you know, like, I'm going to camp after every single discussion, and there's really only one developed interpersonal relationship. It's Gustav and Mael. And so you get things like, there's been implications that Lune might have a personality, but, like, not much of them, like, because, and this is a problem that I get with a lot of RPGs that go for a relatively pure fantasy setting, is that you run into this issue where, like, what would this person be doing? What would this person be doing if they were not on this hell quest? And I could not tell you. And I think there's meat on that concept, because obviously, like, you know, with a world like Expedition 33, no one gets to have a normal life. Like, that is over. But, like, to me, I think that in those situations, you need to build up even more, like, well, what would this person do if this quest succeeded? If they successfully, like, stop the Gamage, stop the Paintress, what is this person's life going to look like? And I could not tell you what any of these people would do if they didn't have to be out trying to, like, the intro says that Gustav is a scientist, but his only reason to pursue science is that he wants to stop the Gamage. What does he do afterwards? Where does his life go? And that's an ongoing question for all of them. Like, Mael, like, it makes sense. Like, they kind of bring up that, well, you know, because she's younger, it makes sense that she doesn't know what her life would be. Lune and the fourth character, I can't remember if her name is Ciel or Skiel, but Skiel's only personality trait so far is scared of water. Like, there's just the, like, they have not, she has not done anything. Done anything yet.
Why is she scared of water?
Game is holding that one to its chest so far. Okay. She washed up. She was rescued by a thing. I think one of the other issues you run into is that, like, the only things that you're talking to most of the time are gestals. These
robots, right?
They're like paintbrush robots, and, like, the only personality they have is, like, they all share this personality, is that they're stupid as fuck. And so there's not really any, like, emotional space for characters to, like, bounce off of them, because, like, the game is constantly reminding you these things are just dumb as rocks. Like, they all have stupid names, they all have they all act like idiots. There's a point where you have to get a password to get past one of them, and the password is "get out of my way," and it turns out that the guy you're getting past was never actually told the password. That's the joke. It's just they're all fucking stupid. And some of those jokes land, but also it means that there's just not a lot of emotional space for the party in the first act. Like, there's just, the only people they have to talk to is each other. They all know each other, so they don't talk about their past that much. They all just kind of are like, yep, I know who you are. And so, yeah, I've just gotten the fifth party member who definitely knows more than he's talking about, and that's going to be a problem, because he's in the party but can't say anything, or I should say refuses to tell everyone what's going on. So that's another character that, like, because of the way the story is written, can't really emote off of anyone, and, like, I have misgivings about how this party dynamic is going to play out over the next Well, I would say two-thirds of the game, but apparently the this, think of the acts as like Final Fantasy VII discs, and Act 3 is just the final dungeon, just like Disc 3 of Final Fantasy VII is just the final dungeon. So, so I guess I'm somewhere between a third and halfway through. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It's seven. Like, underdeveloped party dynamics, some decent character designs, some decent voice acting. I finally found a place that was not all bathed in one color. That was nice. Like, you know, when I'm in the middle of playing it, I'm having a decent enough time. But I'm fully at the point where, like, I'm playing more of it than I probably would otherwise, because I know that if I don't, I would just let it fall by the wayside and never finish it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's your 33 report. I'm hopeful that I will just be done with it by next week.
Okay, who wants to go next?
Okay, go ahead.
I'll try to be quick. Mostly what I've been playing over the past week is just Metroid Prime 4, and I did end up beating it late last night, and got 100% completion, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I thought it was as good as 1 and 2, better than 3. It's exactly what I wanted it to be. You know, just a 3D Metroid game with cutting-edge graphics, good performance. I like that, you know, you have familiar power-ups, but they're not quite the same. There's always a slight twist or maybe some added functionality that you didn't get. So, you know, every power-up now has the word psychic in front of it, and as a result, each thing functions a little bit differently and, you know, maybe does a little extra. So... like they're not space boots, they're psychic boots that let you double jump, you know. And so that's what I mean. It's interesting, but it's very well done. Yeah. So I still haven't read any reviews or seen any scores, and I don't need to. That's fine.
Good and healthy.
Yeah. Well done. So because I beat that game last night, today I was playing Super Mario RPG, the Switch version. I got that for Christmas in 2024 and didn't finish it. Of course, I've played the original multiple times. So I was playing that today and just got to... I just did the whole section with the pirates and Johnny, I think his name is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And got those stars. And oh, yeah. So there's the guy he's like, give me your star or I'm going to... like hurt the people who live in the village, and I'm like, no, I don't care. And then he starts tickling he tickles the village elder repeatedly, and then you, after doing that four times, it's like, oh, I have to say yes. Oh, got it. Because it's like, he's just getting tickled, he's fine. But yeah, so I got to that part, and then you got to beat him to get the star. And no, I love that game, and I love all of the improvements, and it's very, it just looks so impressive. You know, they did a great job updating that game.
It's a really good remaster.
Yeah. And then just over the past hour or so, while I was waiting for people to, you know, start the podcast, I was playing LEGO Horizon Adventures. Really great game. That's something else that I thoroughly enjoy. And the only other thing I'll mention real quick, there's a game called The Last Faith, and it's like a Metroidvania side scroller. It's like somebody was trying to combine Blasphemous with Bloodborne. So similar art style to Blasphemous, but some similar gameplay mechanics to Bloodborne, and it is a full-on RPG unlike Blasphemous, so you actually get XP and level up and get stat points, and you get firearms, you get spells, and you have three different resource meters. You have your health and stuff, and I like it so far. It's, you know, it's a neat game. And so you meet a guy who, like, you go into this manor, and there's this guy, he's a vampire, he's like, oh, I really wish I could go outside. And I'm like, bro, like, there are zombies and things trying to murder me, like, okay, you're stuck inside. Yeah, that sucks, but you don't want to go out there anyways. Yeah. So, it's kind of neat. The thing is, I wanted to do... So you have different starting classes, so I picked one that I thought would be good to do ranged and spells, and come to find out that spells and firearms have to be equipped to your left hand, and you have two slots for each hand, but it's like, oh, so you can't have like a gun in one hand and a spell in the other. And it's like, well, what if I have two spells? Then I can't use my gun. And you have a limited number of bullets like you do in Bloodborne, and you have to collect healing items, so that there's going to come a time where I'm probably going to lose all my healing items and have to go farming for more. But it's kind of neat so far, and I thought it would be something fun to play on Steam Deck. So
sounds cool.
Yeah. So that's what I got. So Gaijin, what have you been playing?
Well, I technically finished up the game I've been playing for the last couple months on and off, so I'm trying to write a review for that. Little Witch in the Woods, it's cute. And then, so I also had some extra points left on the Nintendo Store, so I just went through the cheapest possible stuff I could find, and I'm currently playing a game called Dungeon of Dreadrock because of that. On severe sale. It's been interesting so far. Just looking at the screenshots, I thought, okay, it looks kind of like a top-down Zelda. And it has bump attack like some of the old East games. And then I'm playing it, I'm like, no, this is actually more like Tower of Druaga. The good parts. The good parts. Yeah. So it's basically 100 levels of dungeon. Each one is a puzzle. Some of them have some very interesting ways of dealing with the puzzle. Some of them require you to backtrack and have other things take care of the puzzle for you. So it's, I mean, I'm like 78 floors, or almost 80 floors deep into it by this point. It's not as insanely difficult as Druaga was. Not as obtuse either, but it has a built-in hint function, and I'm happy for that. So, but yeah, it's been fun so far. I mean, I'm almost done with it. It's only been like 3 days.
I mean, that's what you'd expect from that kind of game, unless it's being very obtuse.
Yep. It's definitely not being as obtuse. Yeah.
Well, I guess it's my turn then. I have been playing a review game I can't talk about yet. But I've also been playing Hollow Knight. I talked about it previously.
Hollow Shite.
Wow. I mostly did so to help my son, and then I ended up liking it enough that I'm trying to get the good ending.
What happens when we defeat Wheels' contrarian streak?
So, yeah, I like that game a lot now, though it still has a very mediocre beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to power through that, because like I got to the first upgrade and was like, oh, this upgrade is shit. And then I put it down.
What was the first upgrade? Do you get the dash first?
Like, no, you don't get anything that exciting.
You just get the spell, don't you?
Yeah, you get like some sort of magic, like arrow bolt kind of thing.
No, that thing sucks for most of the game.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, like, it's like getting that as the first power up was so like, why am I even here if that's what I'm fucking gonna get? So that's why I set it down. I'll get back to it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I told you that was pretty much my exact experience initially with it. Like, why am I playing this? What is like the appeal of this? And then eventually, once I got deeper into it, I found it. But yeah,
I believe that it's there.
Not great. I want to say, like, once I got either the double jump or the dash, things started to click.
Yeah, because those are fun abilities. Yeah, don't make you feel like the game is just telling you to fuck off.
But yeah, trying to beat the true boss, which is very difficult. Been trying some different builds. I don't know if I will actually manage it, but yeah, I've had good enough time that I would be happy to go back and do some of the DLC. I will not be doing the Road of Pain, I think it's called, some ridiculous platforming challenge hidden in the game. You will not see me doing that.
Your favorite DLC, Silk Song.
I've seen videos of that. That's insane.
Yeah, I've also seen someone speedrunning the game in half an hour, which is ridiculous. Mm. Yeah, that's pretty much me. Still trying to finish up some Legend of Heroes games.
You have many, so do I.
I have many. But specifically, I want to get off the PC-only ones, because once I get to the Switch ones, I play like everything on Switch, I will start making more significant progress, so I need to power through two of those.
I believe in you.
I believe you can fly.
I believe I can fly.
Believe you can touch the sky.
I would never touch the sky. Can't make me.
Oh, and I didn't mention that this week I was streaming Rune Factory Guardians of Ozma again. So after doing Pokemon for how many streams in a row for like 3 months, I said, let's go back to Rune Factory, and then some crazy things happened, and I was picking dialogue options not thinking that they meant anything. Like, I thought the outcome didn't matter, and it's like, no, it did. So I made decisions that caused a character to permanently die. So.
Whoops. Mm.
Yep.
What did we learn?
That you should actually think long and hard about every dialogue option, because it might actually matter. It's just because the thing that they give you the option to do, I'm like, there's no way they're going to let me actually do that. So I didn't try. And then it's like, oh, that is what they wanted me to do. Sure. Yeah. Oh.
Whoopsies. I guess it happens. You have a save you can go back to?
No, I just have the one save file, and then it auto-saves constantly as well. No, but you know what, though? I stand by my choice, because...
Wow.
I didn't need her anyways. I have two other girlfriends already.
Wow. Wow.
Well, because that's the other thing I found out. I'm like, I was dating one girl, and I'm like, well, what happens if I just ask somebody else out, and it's fine. Neither of them gets upset or seems to even know that it's happening.
At the moment.
Yeah.
Wait, which game are you playing?
Rune Factory Guardians of Ozma.
Eventually you're going to have to, like, marry one of those.
Well, I know which one I'd marry, absolutely.
Can't believe you turned Rune Factory into Fuck, Marry, Kill.
I'm going to marry Ulalaka.
Does she know this?
I think she does. And I think we did an embrace, and then there might have been a kiss, but it doesn't let you go beyond that, as far as I'm aware. And yes, and then somebody died based on my decisions. So yeah, no, you're right. Fuck, marry, kill. It's all in there.
You've gone.
Because I chose to. I didn't kill her, but she died because of my choices.
Died as a result of your action.
So yeah, you killed her indirectly.
Yes.
Okay.
Because I didn't think the game was going to let me do what it was suggesting I do, and I didn't think it was a good idea. Yeah. The game's like, oh, well, you can sacrifice things. Like, why would I do that though? It's like I'm not gonna risk the whole world to save one person. You know, it didn't make sense.
Someone hasn't played a Japanese RPG in a long enough time.
Yeah. Well, I was getting flashbacks to the bad Matrix movies when Neo is just like, yeah, I'm gonna save Trinity, fuck the world.
And then he saved the world. See how it works?
He did both, yeah. So, but my protagonist is not Neo.
Yeah.
But the world ended with you anyway.
Yeah.
Your world ends with you.
Oh, the world's fine. It's just that die.
Someone's world ended with you.
The world's fine. It's just that sometimes people die.
People die when they're killed. Okay. But yeah. So. Yeah, that's what we've all been playing, it sounds like. I should check the Twitch chat to see if we are making Fire Miner wait.
We are.
We always are. God damn it, it's not giving me, unless I'm looking at the wrong Twitch chat. Solve this. You're not even streaming on Ask Wheels, okay. Then, yeah, it doesn't look like it.
Oh yeah, I'm not. Shit. Okay.
But yeah, it looks like it didn't give me the list of things that Fireminer's already posted in the chat.
I can give them to you. Okay. Oh yeah. I bought one of those secondhand Pip-Boy. One of those secondhand Pip-Boy toy. It's just a prop and not one of those phone holders that you put your smartphone in. Like a Pip-Boy from Fallout.
Yeah. Fallout thing, they sold those.
Okay.
Yeah, when Fallout 4 came out, I think there was some ridiculous collector's edition that came with a Pip-Boy, and you put your phone in it, and then there was a special app you could download, so then you could just look at your Pip-Boy to get in-game tips and stuff. Yeah. Way too expensive and sold out instantly, and ended up on eBay for double price.
At least it didn't contain toxic mold.
Yeah.
Unlike the Nuka-Colas.
Oh gosh.
No, wait, it wasn't the Nuka-Colas that had the toxic mold, it was the like power armor heads.
I've been watching season 2 of the TV show, it's pretty good.
I believe, but I will never watch it.
Okay. You don't like Walton Goggins?
I just don't care about Fallout.
Okay.
Like the lore of Fallout does not do anything for me, and I'm sick of 50s pastiches.
Okay.
So it's just like, this is one of those things where it's like, maybe I should just not watch it so that I'm not complaining about something that was not built for me.
That's a good strategy. I should adopt that strategy in my life. No, just recently, just thinking about Wheel of Time TV show that is over. They're not going to do any more seasons, and don't know why they changed. So one of the characters, they made her kind of look and act like Bjork. I'm like, I don't know why they did that. That's not how she's described in the book at all. I don't know.
I know why.
Work.
Because it's not the book. It's the show.
Yeah.
I don't know, I never felt the desire to go back and watch season 2 of that show.
Yeah, they've screwed everything up.
Impossible book series to do as a TV show.
Yeah. Like, I'm glad they tried, but they immediately screwed it up. And it's like, yeah.
I'm sorry, I was thinking about Bork. I don't know what fucking...
No, I kept watching, it would get better, and then it just kept getting worse. So the other thing I want to mention is I watched 2 episodes of the new A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms series.
No, which we're not about that here, and let's move on. I'm sorry, I don't want to hear anything about any of their fucking Game of Thrones shit. Still bitter.
Okay.
Did you just sit on a bench twice and get murdered twice?
Yeah, I wanted to see if it still did the same thing. for science.
Well, I guess you got your answer.
Yep. Alright, what's Fireminer's next question?
Can't see any of them.
What is the chance Kiwami 3 coming out just as rough as Yakuza 3? Did you see screenshots where lighting is all jumbled up and colors are so saturated?
I think the colors being saturated is just an intentional design choice to reflect like the beach scenery of Ryukyu. I've played the demo. It seems fine. I think some people are kind of losing their minds over nothing.
Sounds about right. See what's the next question. Oh, well, Limited Run just recently released two.
They did.
PS1 Fighting Force games on Steam. I remember those games felt
they're dog shit.
Die Hard Arcade.
Yeah. Oh,
God.
So they were originally pitched as. The first one was originally pitched as like a Streets of Rage revival, and then Sega was like, wait, you want to release this on the PlayStation? No. but yeah, I played a lot of Fighting Force. They bad. It's nice when games become available in an official capacity, but I can't in good conscience recommend either of them.
It was one of those games I saw it in a magazine and thought that looks cool, and ended up like renting the N64 version, and then playing like I think I died halfway through the game, like, and I'm like I don't want to play this anymore. Like Die Hard Arcade, you have two different characters with different moves, and you've got like you can do like a suplex and all this cool stuff, and then Fighting Forces, no, I'm just hitting the same button over and over again. Okay. Yeah. Did not care for it.
Since we just did the as a last thing, I'll say that I played a lot of Fighting Force because a friend of mine happened to own it, and it was a cooperative game, so that made sense. But unless you're playing it co-op in 1998, there's really no reason to go back for it. Okay, so since we just mentioned Kiwami, it looks like Fireminer has a follow-up question. If you think about it, it's pretty. It's because the first three Resident Evil games are pretty similar to each other that you can have a level of homogeneity in gameplay and visual between their remakes 0, 5, and Code Veronica feel different because of their quirks and flaws. The head of Ryuga Gotoku Studios has given a few interviews about Kiwami 3 respecting Yakuza 3, but how much about should Kiwami 3 be different to Kiwami 1 and 2, and how much roughness should it have? So what I would say is that Yakuza 1, 2, and 3 are actually fairly of a piece with each other, and Kiwami 1 and 2 are already way more different from each other than 1 and 2 were. Just by dint of one of them being a Yakuza 0 sequel and one of them being a Yakuza 6 sequel. I think that, like, and ultimately, Yakuza 3 is honestly pretty similar to Yakuza 1 and 2. It's just them trying to get it running, get that franchise represented on PS3 with a different camera. And so I ultimately think that the fact that Kiwami 3 plays a lot like Kiwami 2 is mostly pretty fitting. A lot of the things that are janky about Yakuza 3 are things that are janky about Yakuza 1 and 2. So I don't think that jank is particularly a huge part of its identity. Let's see. Okay, I'm getting a. Sorry, I'm responding to a message.
No worries.
Yeah, I don't have anything to say about Yakuza games because I only played the one.
Which one?
The Like a Dragon.
Oh.
7.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good standalone one.
Yeah.
Okay, Fireminer saying on the remake tip, let's just say that Capcom picks the easy way out and structures Resident Evil Zero Remake like RE Revelations and RE Requiem, split sections and all. Will it be a completely different game then? It's kind of going to be a completely different game regardless. If it has a behind-the-back camera, if it's reworked all the puzzles, it's just a different game. Like, that's... Like, the RE2 remake is a completely different game. The RE1 remake is a less completely different game, but still a completely different game. 3 remake, completely different game. Like, any of the classic REs being moved into this behind-the-back camera with the new puzzles, like, those are just different games. I think that ultimately that's probably the correct move. There are elements of RE0 that already do this. There's this section where Rebecca is off on her own and Billy's just off doing his own thing, and that's just how it goes. I think that Zero is probably also just a game that benefits the most from being loose with its remake, because it's kind of bad. Like, its gimmicks simply don't work. RE0 has this really big thing about, like, because RE0 is a response to an environment that is impossible to imagine at this point, which is the idea that you would have gotten so many Resident Evil games at such a rapid clip that you're completely fucking sick of them. I've brought this up before. RE0 came out when the series was 6 years old. It at that point it had RE1 Director's Cut, RE1 Saturn Version, RE2, RE2 DualShock, RE2 N64, which when I bring up these ports, I'm bringing up the fact that they have additional and different content. RE3, RE Code Veronica, RE Code Veronica X, Resident Evil Gun Survivor, Resident Evil Gun Survivor 2, Resident Evil Gaiden. There had been... beyond that, also Dino Crisis and a billion Resident Evil imitators. Like, there were so many of these games that people were just sick of how they functioned, and so RE0 is built around changing how they function, but in ways that are kind of ill-considered. Like, oh, you don't need to go put things in an item box, which is a really common complaint for early Resident Evil games. But as an important point, like, the problem is that with no item box and only the ability to just drop shit wherever you happen to be, there's no place to put things that you would actually want to pick up again. So ultimately, what every player does is make an ersatz item box in a central room of each new area, and keeps accidentally picking up the things that they keeps trying to pick up the right thing and not being able to because there's no actual interface for dealing with there are 20 objects in this room.
Well, eventually they tell you can't leave any more in that room, so then you have to find another room. Yeah,
but it comes to the same thing. And then, of course, the game loves to try to force things into your inventory that you fucking hate, like the grappling hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
and it's, Rebecca it's, has to, but Rebecca has to use it because it has a weight limit of like 50 kilograms or something like that.
No, both of them can use it.
Oh. Okay.
Sure.
Like, why do I remember?
Both of them can use it.
Okay, why do I think I... All right, whatever.
I think there's a point where both of them have to use it, but... Okay. It's just like... I think that, like, ultimately that game kind of has to change because it's just kind of an unpopular game.
Are they doing a Zero remake?
It's been rumored, and there's, like, the kind of person that has been leaking the existence of, like, every RE game since 7 have been very clear that they're doing some kind of Zero remake.
Okay.
So, not announced, but almost assuredly happening.
But what about a 5 remake so we can play co-op again?
I mean, that's also probably going to happen. The real question will be if it'll be loyal to that game's gameplay style or if it will change a lot.
Yeah, they released a character creator for Code Vein too, so I'm just messing around with that just to see what kind of person I can make. I like designing characters and stuff. Pretty neat.
Yeah, that game looks neat.
The first one was neat. I never finished it, but I liked it.
It was made by the team that made the God Eater series, so I believe it's very good.
Continuing with the strain of questions, Fireminer asks, speaking of the Kiwami 3 situation, there's a group of people who thinks that Dark Souls Remastered, Persona 3 Reload, FF7 Remake, and the Resident Evil Remakes are ruined. Because everything is too bright and the shading isn't there. What do you think about this problem? Personally, I think that the evolution of Illumination through the years has been a mess, even until recently. Then you put the quirks of the PS1, PS2, and PS3 on top of it. Maybe we should be a bit more forgiving. I think it's worthy of considering these as products that exist with their own artistic sensibilities, and, like, instead of grading them on how loyal they are, like, trying to think of how much they work on their own terms. And sometimes I think that they do. I think in general Reload is a, like, I don't have a lot of great things to say about Reload, but I do think that Reload's, like, general art direction is fairly strong. I think that works. I think, obviously, I'm a huge fan of 7 Remake's look. It's different from FF7. Honestly, it's actually probably a lot darker than FF7 for the most part. Like, FF7's actually quite pastel in most areas. Even in grim places like Midgar, there's a lot of, like, really bright colors. So honestly, I think 7 Remake ends up looking a lot darker than 7, but I think that ultimately it fits the tone that they made for the game. Ultimately, as we've mentioned a few times in the past, I've never been a huge fan of what Dark Souls Remastered did to the lighting. I think that, like, if a new player played it, they'd be fine with it. That one's also a little rougher just because, like, it markets itself as a remaster and not a remake. So people have slightly different expectations for that, even as people have difficulty, like, fully understanding the difference between these two concepts. Ultimately, like, there's none of these games are completely ruined, but, like, there are ones where I would look at them and be like, I think I just like the older version better. But that older version is also still there. So it's okay to look at something for what it has been, for the choices that were made in the current version.
Next question.
What's that?
That's looking at Farmer's next question.
Oh yeah, I asked 2 weeks ago about Falcom's expansion and production. At least they're at a place where they can think about expansion. It's been 4 years since Star Ocean 6. When Second Story Arc came out, I asked about how Tri-Ace changed because they didn't have the budget and manpower to make something as intricate as Star Ocean 2, but it presents a conundrum for the new fans who got on board with Second Story R, for them to jump to whatever Tri-Ace is cooking right now. Will that future game be good enough to satisfy them? Tri-Ace can't reach the height of Star Ocean 2? Fine, but what is the baseline quality we should expect? Just given the way SO6 turned out to be, it's going to be hard to convince them to drop $60 for SO7 right out of the gate. I need to go back and play Divine Force more. I kind of liked what I played, but like, that's bearing in mind that, like, the Tri-Ace that made Star Ocean 2 hasn't really existed for more than 20 years. I think that is the reason that you sometimes don't see publishers willing to remake things in their backlog, is
like, there's no way to capitalize on them sometimes. Like, okay, we made a remake of our best game. We've been trying to match that game for, you know, many years and have never even come close. Where do we go from here? Like, maybe that's a way to realign ourselves for a sequel, or maybe that's just a one-time cash grab that we never get. That's a lever we can't pull a second time. Notably, I'm not sure how much Triace was even involved with the SO2 remake. It seems to have, like, Second Story R's developer was, like, Gem Drops, I think.
Sounds right.
Yeah, Gem Drops Incorporated seems to have been the primary developer on that. So honestly, I'd really be curious, like, what Square has put them on. but yeah, like the you know, anyone who got into Star Ocean with Second Story R, there's as much as I love the franchise, there's nowhere to go but down. Like, and that does present a conundrum.
Or let somebody else make a better game.
Yeah. Like, you can always, you know, like, those remakes can sometimes be an excuse to try to realign around an old concept.
Next question.
Yeah. Just a moment. We all have heard the story of how Square realized painfully that despite all their success with the PS1, they just didn't make enough to catch up with the increasing production cost. The realization led to many things, among them the merger with NX, Spirits Within, compilation of F7, but their chase for the next F7, how much of it is fueled by corporate calculation, how much of it is people who forever live in the shadow of F7? Certainly, like, I'm not sure those are separatable concepts. Like, you live in the shadow of FF7 because it was that successful. From both the critical and
financial.
Yeah, and financial perspective. So you know, ultimately, if you're living in the shadow of that as a developer, you're doing it because of that, of the same reason that they want to keep pursuing it. But I think that there's not a lot sorry, I'm trying to reorient my thoughts. See. But yeah, like, I think that there's always going to be people who want to create something new that becomes that big. And you see that every so often with, like, things like the desire to see FF15 sell 10 million copies, that kind of thing. But, you know, chasing a shadow is something that, like, lives within a corporation even after they've already sort of... Sorry, chasing that shadow continues even, you know, generations of employee later. Like, that's an unfortunate aspect. But, yeah, I think that there's the desire to make the next FF7, so to speak, would come from both Both, of course, like, companies always want to make money, and people want to produce something that resonates with people on that level. Like, that's just one of the things people want from art, is to resonate with people. And now we've got Naoki Hamaguchi saying in an interview that the new crop of Square Enix employees really like FF13. Expedition 13 is made by people who are way into FF10 generation, while the next FF that's made by the FF13 generation. Where does that leave FF8 and 12? Time passed them by. What were their impacts and legacies to the genre, and were there lasting impacts on, or just another step in an evolution proceeding that led to FF13 or Last Remnant or other 7th gen Japanese RPGs? I mean, like, I'll say, like, mostly passed them by. I will say that, like, FF12 has a lot of things that kind of resemble it one way or another, just because it kind of ushered in a certain kind of combat that's become, that definitely has modern representatives. The thing is that, like, certain things have very obvious antecedents just by dint of, like, how those antecedents behave. And, like, honestly, things that try to play like FF12 tend to look a certain way to begin with. But yeah, but like as for something like FF8, I've never seen anything. I'm sure that it influenced people, but it's also, like, while mechanically strange, I've never seen anything that directly lifts its mechanics, and so it becomes hard to, like, detect it as, like, oh, this is what you were playing, this is what you were thinking of, this is what you were doing. Like, if something steals a very specific or unique mechanic or motif, that's when we can, like, without an interview where someone says, this is what I was thinking of, detect these kinds of things. Speaking of the topic of realism, the more I delve into the argument about the art direction of OGF of 7 versus 7 Remake, the more I realize how the idea of art direction to a lot of people boils down to how the game's visual and audio guide the player's perception to a specific place. There are a lot of principles in photography and cinematography about guiding the audience's eye line. It applies to marketing too, where you want your messaging to directly impact the frontal lobe of your audience. Still, I can't help but to think that the insistence on the above definition of art direction can stray too far into the territory of yellow paint, and the story has to explain everything to you. It's the job of the artist to see beauty in every corner of life and then highlight it to their audience. But at which degree of clarity and definition should they do it? It's not enough for it to be good, but must it also tell you how it is good? I think, ultimately, that using something like eye lines as the arbiter of art direction is, like, really limiting what art direction is. Art direction is also just much more difficult for games, just because outside of games that deliberately wrest control of the camera from the player and do not let them change it, you can't tell where the player is looking. And so you end up having to pursue something that can at least look passable at every angle, because players go ballistic when they see something that doesn't look as good as they expect it to be. See also, if we continue with FF7, the way that people went absolutely fucking nuts when a texture didn't load in high enough resolution for a door. Like, they were so mad about that. But But yeah, it's one of those things that, like, art direction encompasses a lot of things, up to and including, like, how much to focus on any given aspect of presentation. How much are we focusing on, like, and it's such a complex thing because your art direction also has to be cognizant of your tech, like what your tech is limited by and what it's actually good at. You know, like you might have in your concept sketches something that ultimately the rendering just doesn't work on. Like and you know, having to adapt from that. So like, you know, the to be adaptable ends up being really, really important for these kinds of things. And to understand what your limitations are and where to make sacrifices, because like ultimately not everything can be as detailed as you might want. But I think that like things like yellow paint, like they end up, you know, they show up.
Sparkles.
Yep. Back in the day, you would have a sparkly thing to indicate that you could interact with it. And now you get
not
yellow
that much
paint.
Effort.
Yeah. Ultimately, like it's something that there's like anyone with a cursory understanding of design or color theory could tell you why you don't see a lot of bright yellows in nature, so it draws the eye. And ultimately, you're probably more concerned with the 70% of people who need the paint to figure out where the fuck they're going over the 10% who will see it and be just fucking livid because they think the game's insulting them. Like, ultimately, that is much more... you end up having to make decisions. Like, like with anything in design, you're going to have to decide who you actually want to service with your design. And ultimately, most devs, especially on expensive projects, are going to decide, I'd really rather that people not get lost. Because, like, you know, you'll play something that makes it easy to get lost and end up, like, we've all had this. I had this, you know, playing Expedition 33. Like, Jesus Christ, why isn't there a map? I can't, like, I keep getting turned around and going in circles. And it just happens. Like, those aren't even complex maps. People are bad at keeping 3D space in their head. And so, like, even so, like, between, you know, a whole other aspect of art direction is you visible landmarks that are not distracting. Like, all of these things, like, end up being major concerns for what we would think of as art direction. They're all kind of wrapped up in that. Let's see. Okay, we're all aware of the meme that most Japanese RPGs are about finding a god or gods of, or some organized religions. Hasn't anyone noticed that there aren't many Japanese RPGs that let us fight the people who serve gods, the priests? A lot of time they either let someone else fight for them or they turn into monsters themselves. We've got a long history of Christianity. Holy men taking up arms or Japanese monks forming armies. Like Nobunaga's ambitions let you fight monks because that was what happened in history, but you never get to do so in samurai warriors. There's a nervousness about that for probably a lot of cultural reasons, not the least of which is like it's more culturally acceptable to say your religion is wrong than to say you're an asshole for believing it.
Yeah.
Like, so you end up with a lot, like that's reflected in our fiction. Like you, when you, for the most part, like you'll fight like higher ups in religion. Like, there's a whole bunch of games where you're going to fight, like, essentially a pope. You know, like the
Maester. Well, literally the pope in a few games.
Yeah, the Maester's in FF10 or Zera in Grandia 2, like that kind of character.
Yeah.
You can fight them because they are. But, like, just an individual priest is generally considered to be someone who's been hoodwinked. It would be like saying, I'm going to stop this cult by beating the shit out of every single member of it. Like, so there's also the moral question of, like, are we holding them, are we holding people who have theoretically been tricked as accountable as the people who did the tricking? And a lot of games and media in general just don't want to approach that. And the same with, like, Samurai Warriors doesn't want you killing a bunch of Buddhist monks, because as it turns out, a lot of people were and to some extent still are pretty pissed about what Nobunaga did. So, not a lot of love for reenacting what is often considered an atrocity. So I think there's a lot of reasons to be squeamish about that, especially if you want your characters to be unambiguously heroic. What's the funniest
or had some moral quandaries like Waka in Final Fantasy X.
Big festival fireworks. What is the funniest case of doing the bare minimum in the video game industry? A recent example is Granblue Fantasy finally getting a Steam release after 10 years, and it doesn't even allow you linking your existing Granblue account with your Steam account, meaning longtime players will lose their progress. And if you know how many hoops international fans had jumped through to play this game, you know that they'll be very hesitant to jump onto Steam. I'm trying to, like, I would probably guess, like, if I had to hazard a guess, it would probably be some particularly low quality emulation wrapper. I'm trying to remember, like, I recall some of these. This isn't doing the bare minimum, but it is funny, so I'm going to bring it up. So right as the Dreamcast was dying, there was a Sega, like, classics collection called Sega Smash Pack that was just emulating, like, six Genesis games on a disc. And when, as Dreamcast piracy was extraordinarily common and very easy, there was a text document in the files on the disc for Sega Smash Pack on Dreamcast. And that text document was directly addressed to one of the biggest cracking groups for the Dreamcast.
Huh.
And all it had inside it was instructions on how to get the emulator to run other Genesis ROMs.
Oh.
and a message about being from Uncle Sonic. Very strange. Definitely not low effort, like someone was making a choice there, but it is extraordinarily funny that, like, and in that realm, I feel like it really would have to be, I think the other thing that would probably have to qualify would be something that appeared on an old British PC game. I'm forever haunted by a statement made by the Stamper Brothers, who founded Ultimate Play the Game and Rareware, who brought up that it was weird working for Nintendo on the Famicom, because Nintendo would tell them that they had to go back and fix it if something was not possible to complete. There's a pretty infamous game on old British PCs called Squidge,
which does not is straight up non-functional unless you do a memory poke to turn off caps lock. It's basically non-functional if you don't. It's basically non-functional still if you do. If you successfully get through any of the game's like exits of the first screen, it basically crashes. And the designer was like a 16-year-old who sent it to a company he was contracted to make games for because he wanted out of his contract and hated them. And so, and they just released it anyway. So as laziness goes, that has to be up there. Like the bare, I actually, honestly, that might not count because it's doing less than the bare minimum. You have failed to do the bare minimum. but yeah, presumably if I were to continue thinking about this enough, I would think of some particularly low quality emulation wrapper that turned out to be very funny. I recall, I can't remember what game this was, but there was like some game in the last 10 years where it was like a re-release of an old game, and it turned out that if you like plugged a keyboard into your console, you could get it to, you could get into the debug menu because they hadn't ever disabled it in any fashion. And you could fuck with the settings in very strange ways, but I can't remember what this particular game was, so I can't answer that properly. Though given the side games we're talking about, there's a good chance of a double whammy to happen, and a lot of people just saying F it and making a second account on Steam. Yeah, yeah. I like the people in the gacha thrall, they go through a lot. Speaking about PC ports of Japanese games, let's talk Team Arcana, which is the successor of the defunct developer Examu, best known for Arcana Heart. They have been busy releasing their old games like Demon Bride and Aquapaza on Steam, and these Steam ports invariably have some problems. They aren't as bad as early 2000s Steam ports, and they were made for arcade, then ported to PS3, so you can blame the problems on that. Yeah, like, ports of ports of ports tend to end up producing strange problems. See also, like, modern ports of things like Sonic Adventure, which is, like, a port of a Dreamcast game to GameCube, which was then ported to PC, which was then ported to more modern PC, and which just has layers of accreted bugs from all of those processes. Like, that just happens. If it's like tech debt, but worse, weirder. So you're going to ask just how expensive these days to port games to PC for Japanese developers who still use their OGs. Switch and PS4 as their target platforms. I mean, it's gotten easier. It's gotten less expensive because this, even the Switch and PS4 are basically computers. And they behave the way you would expect a computer to. At least on a very broad level. So, you know, you can get away with a lot of stuff that you might not otherwise. Let's see. But yeah, ultimately, like, the point of these is to be inexpensive because a lot of them won't sell that well, but they'll sell well enough and they can continue to be a source of income as, like, as new generations of weird sickos find them on Steam. You know the joke with many anime-style Japanese RPGs, the in-game cutscene consists of mostly characters standing around and talking with little emotion shown on their faces. I get that it's a game with 3D models and not a live-action movie, but at the same time, do you think that it's a problem with the budget or the director? I think it's mostly the budget. Like these, the ones you're thinking of that do that are games that don't have a lot of money. Like, go back and, you know, you look at any of the PS2 era SMTs and then compare them to Final Fantasy X, a game that actually does have some, like,
inexperienced cutscene direction, but still a lot of direction in those cutscenes. There's a lot of attempts to do interesting camera work because FF10 has a lot of money behind it. And that's ultimately it, is that, like, you know, you optimize for what you have time and money for. And especially if you're making low budget RPGs, you're going to quickly optimize for, it's not in the budget to do, we have so much dialogue, and a lot of it's probably getting rewritten at various stages, mm-hmm. and that would require redirecting cutscenes. So instead of doing that, we do a very simple direction. It's sort of like how back in the day you would look at, like, or even now, like, TV direction is very different from movie direction, because TV direction is about getting a lot of footage. It's like you have to, you can't spend the same amount of time, and you aren't going to fuck with lighting, and you aren't going to, like, do a lot of, like, weird camera pans, because there's a lot of stuff. You have too much other things to get. Like, you need a take of everything. Like, you need a passable take of everything. Don't have time for it. Low-budget RPGs are working in that cheap TV soap opera space. Like, you go look at old soap operas, they're having to produce just tons of content, so they have very simple, very easy to stage, very practiced angles and ways of shooting things, for much the same reason that Japanese RPGs are doing. That's right. Neptunia is the soap opera of the modern world.
Is there any doubt?
Like, whenever a character from South America or Southern Europe shows up in an anime, there is going to be someone speaking Spanish, Portuguese, or Italian complaining that the character acts too cold and lacks the intimacy expected from those countries. Instead, they act more like Japanese themselves. That's going to happen with everything, because, like, and is hardly unique to Japan. Certainly America does it. Certainly those countries also do it with other cultures. It's just inescapable. But the other thing is that, like, that with games you have the added layer of the portrayal and animation of physical, like, closeness is really hard. There's a reason that every time you see someone hand something to someone else, their hands are conspicuously off screen, unless the game is very high budget.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much work. It's not enough. So, yeah, like, if you're trying to make a character that is, you know, running up and, like, they're very, like, close and physically close, it's hard to actually make that look good, so you mostly just don't. Like, otherwise you get, like, model clipping issues, or it's clear that their models aren't actually touching, or they're, like, there's all sorts of room for animation errors if there's issues with rigging. There's just all sorts of reasons that this ultimately just doesn't end up happening. Just from a technical perspective, it's easier to animate characters who don't have a lot of physical closeness, and to, even if you have budget, just pan the camera around to imply something rather than show it, because the animation would be technically prohibitive. And if you're only going to do it a few times, like, no, I'm not spending, like, you know, if I'm the animator, it's like, I'm not spending this much time to have an instant, like, a secondary character be all touchy-feely and, like, having to re-rig everyone to make sure that they don't break when he does this. That's kind of what we end up with. Let's see, I've already brought up the fact that the Idea Factory is more resilient than a cockroach. But what about Nippon Ichi Software? Trajectory of the Disgaea franchise largely satisfied its fans, and will their financial trouble to play their upcoming game, Curse Warrior, which seems to bear some imprint of Darkest Dungeon?
Ooh.
They're like, they've definitely like tenaciously clung to life, and part of that actually ended up being because of their international operation. I've never seen a company nearly go under because their gacha game failed before. That is still one of the grimmest things I've ever seen. But like, I think that qualifies for cockroach status. Not as an insult. But I do think that like they are at this point quite aware that like Disgaea is the thing that keeps them existing.
And yeah,
there is a desire to make sure that all of their games aren't in just the one basket. I think they would like to have at least a second basket, which is why we saw things like Phantom Brave 2 happen.
Mm-hmm. Or isn't there something else coming up, like Makaiism or something like that?
I think so.
I know I saw something in the news.
What's that upcoming game? And they already announced Desco is going to be a DLC.
That may have been what I saw.
The direction RPG.
Yeah. Looks like an action RPG in the Disgaea universe, maybe. Yeah.
Makaiism?
Yeah, Kyoran Makaiism.
Yeah.
It's due out in like 4 days in Japan.
Yeah, I don't think it's been announced for the West yet.
I think it showed up at a Nintendo Direct at least once.
Yeah.
What's it called again?
Makaiism.
Frenzy of like another
Makai
world.
So like Makai and then SM at the end, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It does not have a Western release yet.
It's weird to me, because I swear that showed up in Nintendo Direct in English.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm misremembering.
No, I'm pretty sure I actually saw it as an ad on a Japanese site.
Oh, Japanese release date January. It's like,
that is so definitely Nipponichi. I have no idea what that is, but it's so definitely Nipponichi.
Yeah, January 29th. Yeah.
In Japan. I suspect it'll be here. Yeah, I suspect it'll be here before fall here. But yeah, like definitely like that feels like them trying to make something that's more quote unquote with the times, like making an action RPG but still hedging their bets by making it kind of Disgaea. Like there's brains in there.
That's what it looks like.
And I'm interested to see how that turns out, but it definitely feels like them trying to find something else to have that isn't just a cult hit strategy RPG. But they're also being very careful to continue to just like, we produce some assets and then we produce like 4 Disgaea from them. Disgaea 8, where are you?
Well, 7 was amazing, so let's get 8. Let's go.
I'm sure it's coming.
Yeah, it looks like you just play as a guy who summons demons, and you can summon all the demons from Disgaea, it looks like.
Cool.
Yeah.
You have these models now?
And, the cover art shows a shark. I'm like, I don't think there were shark demons in Disgaea, so maybe there's some new stuff in here, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This looks neat. Oh, it'll be on PS5 and Switch 1 and 2. Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the thing that it's a coin flip about now is whether something comes out on Xbox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, what came out of it? Because Disgaea 4 Complete Plus, I think, was on Xbox, but not 5 or 6 or 7, I don't think.
Yeah. If you were to ask me an audience that would have no time in its life for Disgaea, I would say the whoever's buying Xbox games in this day and age.
At this point, yeah. Even if it was on Xbox, I would buy it on PlayStation, so I wouldn't care anyways.
Yeah, it really... Like I said, a lot of those niche games, like it's an absolute coin flip if they come out on Xbox or if they come out later.
like AAA games, it's a coin flip if they can make a Switch 2 version work. Niche games, it's a coin flip of if making an Xbox version makes sense.
I mentioned Highguard before. Yeah, reviews on Steam so far are mostly negative.
To be fair, that means nothing because Steam reviews are often written by complete lunatics, but it's probably not very
But then it's telling me secure boot and TPM 2.0 not detected. I've never seen that before on Steam. They're telling me my system, maybe I need a newer processor or something.
I think I saw someone talking about this. It's that it requires like extreme access to your PC for anti-cheat purposes.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wouldn't cheat anyways, but I'm just saying, like, I don't want to play your silly game anyways.
It's not an RPG. Why you don't even have to talk about it?
That's the meme of the day.
No, it came up earlier, and I'm just browsing Steam, and yeah, okay, it's fine. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Okay, so we've got a couple of these that have shown up. If for some goddamn reason Square decided to make a game out of the novel FF10 2.5, will you say that it's a suicidal attempt or an attempt to sink the FF10 ship once and for all? Sure. I would say that it's more someone failing to read the room as far as how people felt about that story. Because, holy shit, that's a rough one. But yeah, I think it would also require at least like four major executives to have lost their marbles. Like that's if we ever see an FF10 3, first it would end up following off of an FF10 remake, and second, that game would that game would definitely carve out time to tell its own story. Because the other thing about 10.2.5, the novel, is that it isn't a complete story. It's basically a setup. Like, it's clearly starting a story that it does not resolve. Yeah, don't read it if you haven't already. It came out over 10 years ago, and they still haven't bothered making anything to finish it out. But it would be like if they made a game based off of Final Fantasy VII Lateral Biography, Turks Gaiden, the kids are all right. And it's like, okay, well, that's never going to be a game. Like, that's just not going to happen. Like, they took bits of it and put it in VII Remake. Like, you ever wondered why there was a character who's kind of Yuffie but not named Kyrie? That's why. She's from that. Also, yes, it does include the phrase lateral biography in its title.
I don't even know what to say about that.
You are saying words, and I don't know. I have no context for these words.
Just a genuine
words for this time of night.
Yeah, we'll probably have to close it out after this one, but I would see anything like that as being, like, by necessity, something that could only happen if Square Enix was actively, like, if there was a gas leak in the executive level of the company, because, like, so many people would have to sign off on that without ever questioning what the fuck they were doing. We all know how people think about the FF7 compilation or the FF10 novels, but I've never heard anyone ever mention Final Fantasy Legend of the Crystals. How was it at Square's first attempt to jump into animation? Completely mediocre. It's bad, but not bad in a terribly remarkable way. Yeah. Like, it's just a very dull fantasy OVA that technically is an FF5 sequel, but ultimately just not like bad in ways that are entirely uninteresting.
Yeah, I remember trying to watch it back in the day, and it's like, yes, a Final Fantasy anime, and it's just not.
It's just like Final Fantasy Unlimited. Speaking of people saying, yes, a Final Fantasy in an anime, oh wait, I'm not interested in this. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's technically, it exists, it is, again, I'm trying to think of things to say, the thing with it is not that, like, it's not good, it's not bad enough to be interesting, because, like, to be interesting, it would have to be trying to do something. And it's not. It's not trying much. It's kind of ugly. It's, like, you know, because it's a 90s OVA, so, like, they're not as flush with cash as they might have been otherwise. So it's just kind of dull. The only bit of animated Square content I recommend from that era is the bit of the Chrono Trigger short where Gato sings his song. It's so beautiful. He's just like, you know, you have to accept that he's gonna sing proper with his proper Japanese name of Gonzalez, but it's beautiful. Ah, Gonzalez, ore wa tsuyoi. It's beautiful. I'm gonna put it. I've put it in Wheels' Discord many times, and guess what? I'm doing it again.
Doing it again. Well, I remember someone telling somebody about Final Fantasy 15 So I think somebody was just asking me, they're like, oh, I watched that Kingsglaive movie, I didn't understand what was going on. I said, yeah, it depicts things that were happening off camera during the beginning part of FF15. And he's like, oh, okay. And I'm like, yeah.
So many people convince themselves that they needed to watch that to make sense of it. And it's like, you really don't.
No, you really don't. But that's like I said, I thought it was an interesting companion piece, but like you don't need to watch it. It's just stuff that was happening off camera. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just.
And I thought Aaron Paul did a good job, sure.
Yeah. It's one of those things that's like, yeah, it's there. If you liked FF15's world and plot, here's something more of it. But that's kind of it.
And yeah, I don't think it was bad. It just wasn't necessary. And.
There's a reason that they're not depicting that on screen in the game, because it's not super necessary.
But see, I wonder if they'd ever do something else in the line of, like, Advent Children, you know? I don't know.
Mm.
Like, something else in the Final Fantasy VII world, you know? I don't know. And I never watched this Spirits Within. What was that even about?
No,
was that...
No.
Okay.
Unrelated
okay.
to Final Fantasy, and it's bad. It's so bad.
Okay.
It's okay. So
I mean, it's one of those things. Like, it's mostly a fairly generic sci-fi film.
Yeah.
Okay.
With some weird mysticism about like planet spirits, but that's about it.
Does it have Steve Buscemi?
Yes.
No. Cool.
Bing Rames is there. God, that has a weird ass. That was a weird ass cast.
It's a weird movie.
Weird film. Like, just kind of like I saw it for my birthday that year. That was depressing.
I saw it, and then we went to see another movie immediately, and that movie was AI.
Oof! That is a the Steven Spielberg movie picked up from a Stanley Kubrick movie.
Was an afternoon of pain.
The AI wasn't that bad.
Mistakes were made. The Ming-Na Wen, Alec Baldwin, Donald Sutherland, James Woods, Ving Rhames, Perry Gilpin, and Steve Buscemi.
Absolutely
bizarre. Also, spelled with an S. Get out of here.
All I can think is, ooh, piece of candy, whenever people mention that guy.
Like, honestly, for his sake, he's lucky that that's what you're thinking of instead of, oh, a sex predator.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the less you know about James Woods' personal life, the better.
Okay. Mm. I'll just keep thinking of him as, ooh, piece of candy guy.
Mm-hmm.
Who somehow gets outsmarted by a dog and a baby.
That makes sense to me.
Maybe that's how he should be remembered.
Yeah. Probably.
If at all.
Yeah, if at all.
I think, yeah. I want to say my dad took me to see AI, and I think we also saw K-Pax. Oh, and at some point, I remember my dad saying, why do you make me bring you to the weirdest movies?
Getting savagely owned by your father.
Yeah.
Why well, I'm just like, okay, K-Pax has entered the conversation. Oh, man.
Well, lately he comes over and he just wants me to bring up this Stephen Colbert monologues on YouTube, and I'm happy to oblige with that.
That's at least something that you can bond over.
Yeah. Oh, we watched the John Candy documentary together. That was good.
A piece of candy. Yeah. Okay, we're tired and getting punchy. I think we should probably wrap it up.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me where I can read books.
Buy my book.
Well, buy any book. Books are good. We need books in these times.
Yes. I have books. Yes.
I have lots of books. Yes, I do. Oh, anyway. Yeah. Ugh. So, yes. Or, oh, well, I'm trying to think of a good way of linking this into previous conversations, but it's not coming to me right now. Oh, well. Anyway, yes, so, yes, we have books. We have books about tabletop role-playing games. We have books very loosely based around the concept of Metroidvania. We have books about Japanese folklore and funny animals and dying in various ways. Because, you know, that's how folk tales often go. So we have probably not exactly safe for work travelogue romanticy. We have lots of things. So...
A book most for of this, all occasions.
Book for all occasions, yes. So most of this is under the name Michael Yarimizu, Y-A-R-I-M-I-Z. Just because my in-laws are very nice about this kind of thing. And honestly, my name is too generic for Google. Or it's like modern-day problems. So yes, so we have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor. It's hard to estimate exactly what the current word count is, but I'm at least 12,000 words into episode 14 right now. Yay.
Yay.
Out of 15 episodes planned for the primary story arc, so this is reaching a major milestone here. Whether it will actually be the length of War and Peace by the time I'm done with it, it'll be close. I'm working on it. And then we have Tanuki as a Teapot, which is the aforementioned Japanese folktales collection. Again, just some stories that are very well-known internationally, some of them that are not as well-known internationally, a few that have, as far as I know, no other English translation available. Just because I like scouring through old Japanese collections of folktales just to find stuff. I've got some fun new ones coming up, too. And for the Metroidvania representation, we have Vainglorious, Long as the Night. About as Metroidvania a title as I could come up with. Again, all good fun. Just for the hell of it, and nobody has actually sprung for the paperback editions yet, but if they do, then the paperback cover is formatted more like a Game Boy Advance Castlevania box from Japan.
Oh, that's cool.
Which means that
the Japanese GBA boxes are very handsome.
Yes, nice and rectangular. So if you order the paperback version and it comes to you and you're wondering why the heck is the cover sideways, that's why. It's the wonders of what you can do when you have absolutely no editorial authority over your own head except your own personal judgment.
Nice.
This explains several choices I have made over the years. And we'll continue to keep making just because, you know what, I really just want to see if I can make this work. And then for the not safe for certain audiences selection, that's under the name Spearwater, S-P-E-A-R-W-A-T-E-R, Michael Spearwater. That one is travelogue, romanticy, and way too much fun with calendar systems. It makes sense if you read it, if you actually manage to get all the way through it. But, yes, the history of calendars is very weird, very strange, very fun to play around with. Yep, it just shows you what kind of nerd I am here. Yes, continuing to work on other stuff. Like I said, I am most of the way through the next episode of Princesses of the Pizza Parlor. Which, again, that will make it 14 episodes, 5 side stories, and a paralogue novel thus far. And working on a few other things, which we will be hearing about eventually. Okay, thank you.
Hooray! Joe, where can we find you?
You can follow me on Blue Sky or YouTube under Smoke and Joe Gamer. I also stream for RP Gamer, so every Tuesday, Thursday night, you go to the RP Gamer Twitch channel, which you might be watching right now, and I do stream. So it was Pokemon Legends ZA for a long time. I switched back to Rune Factory Gardens of Ozma for a week. I don't know what it's going to be. I'm going to keep alternating between those until I finish Pokemon, and then... I'm supposed to be getting East 10 Proud Nordics when that comes out, so yeah, check out those streams. So that's Tuesday, usually starting around 9, and then Thursday starting around... Or no, hold on. Tuesday starting around 10, Thursday starting around 9, and that's Eastern time. So yeah, I like to go for 2 or 3 hours if I can. Nobody goes after me. Yeah, so check that out. And then on YouTube, the newest videos on there are still the Holiday Buying Guide series that I did. So, if you still got some holiday cash or gift cards, or, you know, you pay attention to sales and stuff, then yeah, I got a whole bunch of videos for games that came out last year, let you know if they're any good or not, and give you a better idea of if you want to buy them or not. So, yeah, check out those YouTube videos if you don't mind. Any liking, following, commenting, etc. is appreciated. And you can join the RP Gamer Discord server if you want, and you can chat with me on there.
It's a good community, so you should do that.
Yes. You're not very good at this game, Wheels.
I'd like to see you do better.
Okay, so real quick... once again, and as ever, thank you to Fireminer for keeping us with plenty of questions. Also, just to answer one last quick question. So FF7 Evercrisis is having a Dirge of Service event, Monkey Paw, anyone? No, it's because the game just turned 20. But...
The turkey's a little dry.
Turkey's a little dry. But yeah, you can ask us questions like our dear friend Fireminer did by jumping on to twitch.tv/rpgamer or twitch.tv/askwheels Mondays at around 8:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific, 11:30 midnight Eastern, until all of us get too tired to go on and die. But otherwise... you can ask us questions in the RP Gamer Discord by going to www.rpgamer.com and clicking the community tab. It's a Discord invite there, as long as you haven't been a jackass and gotten yourself banned for some reason. we always will listen to what's in the podcast section if it looks like a question for us. You can also ask us questions in the comments section under this very video. Jesus, my brain's cooked. This very episode, if you go to the comment section under the article on RP Gamer, we try to keep track of those sometimes. We're bad at it, but we try. I usually run back through the last couple episodes.
Just want to say, are all the episodes on YouTube now?
They should be, yeah, they get auto-upload by some RP Gamer thing.
Okay. And so they're on
channel? I don't know. They end up on YouTube somewhere.
I thought they went to your channel. So I just want to throw out there, if you go to the Ask Wheels YouTube channel, I think you could type questions in the comments there if you wanted to. You know, I don't see why not.
No, I'm not checking them.
Okay, never mind.
I would get notifications.
There's many vectors.
You could do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you must, but then it becomes Wheels' job, and he is a flake.
It's true.
Best bet is to watch the live streams on Twitch on Sunday night around 11:30 or midnight Eastern time, and type in the comments.
Monday night, whatever night it is, you can bother us during
during shenanigans.
Yeah, on Ask Wheels, you can watch on Sunday night, and we'll probably be just being belligerent and assholes to each other.
Sure. Watch shenanigans. That's good too. Yeah.
I wouldn't go so far as good, but it exists.
Speaking of which, I will be putting a bonus episode up on the feed. It will be our award show for games of 2025.
Mostly it's just us. Being
definitive, well-curated list.
There were definitely no awards where Wheels forgot to select a winner. Yeah. Definitely no awards where none of us remembered to vote.
This award show brought to you by Shadow Labyrinth.
Yeah.
But seriously, we're everyone not should try paid. Shadow Labyrinth. It's bizarre. I had to play Pac-Man in it yesterday. It was hilarious.
Pac-Man's all over that game. You should have known.
That's true. Also, Dig Dugs.
Yeah, Diggs Dug. Everyone should be. I'm going to bring up the more important Dig Dug canon and bring up once again that Dig Dug used to be married to the protagonist of forgotten Namco arcade game Baraduke. She left him. their child is Mr. Driller.
Wow.
Seriously?
Yes. There is a DS game that is where at least part of the plot is that Dig Dug is upset that his son is more popular than him.
Wow.
So when you think of Dig Dug, it is important to remember that you are thinking of a shitty dad. but yeah, so with that piece of wisdom, I wish you all a good night and see you, Space Cowboys.
And good mole man to you.
Oh, we must have the original.
This is Mole Man in the morning. Good Mole Man to you.